The Spirit of New England, WBZ Boston Group, W. Westinghouse Broadcasting. 7 years ago, I worked with a pleasant chap. I liked him very much. We became very friendly. Ron Landry. And he left, he went out west, and he became a huge success. And I didn't even know. I knew that he was very, very creative, but I didn't know that he was a writer, too. So let's go out to California to Ron Landry and find out what has happened to him in the last 3, 4, or 5 years. Hello, Ron.
Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Let me give you a round of applause first.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's nothing,
beautiful.
Ron.
You're beautiful people.
Ron, I just got your note, and I'm really surprised that we'll keep our fingers crossed that this show on CBS starting August 1st, Monday night at 8:30, will be a huge success.
Oh, hey, I thank you for that, Larry. Gee, I can hardly hear you, Larry. Why is that?
Well, I'm standing...
Is Westinghouse paying their bills yet?
I don't know. Let me check with the bill here.
Did they pay it? It was due, you know, on the 20th.
I can hear you clearly. You can't hear me at all? Can you hear me?
Very vaguely.
Very vaguely.
You sound like you're 3,000 miles away.
I'm standing 10 feet from the microphone.
Wow.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
I can vaguely hear you. Well, let's just continue and press on.
Okay. Now, what year did you leave Boston, Ron?
I left April Fool's Day of 1970.
You're a kid, 1970.
That's right, yeah. I arrived in Boston in 1965 and left in 1970.
Oh, seriously.
It's been 7 years, Larry.
I thought it was 3 years.
No, it's been seven.
7 years ago, my God. 7 years ago. Now, when you went up... You went out to California, and the first thing that we heard, you were recording albums with Hudson and Landry.
Yeah, I came out here, and I started working at KTBS Radio, and I met Bob Hudson, and we started doing record albums, and got lucky with Ajax Liquor and a couple of other ones.
That was really funny. Now, did you help write those yourself?
Oh, sure, yeah. Bob and I wrote all those albums.
Right.
We wrote five of them.
Right.
And we continued then to do a lot of nightclubs and stuff like that, and moved over to KFI Radio, which is one of the real nice ones out here. Where you belong, Larry?
Oh, Ron. What sort of a station is it?
Out here in Hollywood. When I played your album out here, they said, why isn't this man out here?
Hollywood.
That's it.
La, 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 Hollywood.
I know that all the Glicknicks couldn't stand to lose you, though, so you're doing a tremendous service by staying right where you are.
Now, what was your job? What time were you on?
During the afternoon. I was doing from 3 to 6.
Right.
In the afternoon. And then last June, I had this idea about a television show, and I decided to give up radio and try that because it was an idea I'd had for a long time and I really wanted to do it. So with a friend of mine, Jim Mulligan, we grew up together in Washington, D.C., and we sat down and wrote this presentation for a television series about the place where I grew up. And CBS liked it and supported us. And we then went out and made a pilot around Thanksgiving.
Hey, where'd you get all the money to do this stuff, Ron? That's very expensive, isn't it? Make
CBS
a pilot?
CBS puts up all the money.
Who does?
CBS. Isn't that nice?
Okay. I thought that when a person made a pilot that you had to come up with the money yourself.
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
They put up the money, and then we did a pilot around Thanksgiving, and then after we did the pilot, we looked at it, and we changed a few things, and then we started in April of this year to record, or rather, tape six of them. So we've taped six, and they're all ready to go, and they start August 1st at 8:30. That's on a Monday night on CBS.
Now, are you in the play?
No, I just write them.
Oh, you should have been in it yourself.
Well, it's very difficult to wear two hats.
I know
you wear a lot of hats, but it's very difficult to wear two hats in this arena.
Yeah.
Now, because while you're up there writing the next one, all the actors are down there taping the first one.
Oh, yeah. I see. Now, can you tell us a little bit about this play? I thought, what made me think that you were born down south, further south than Washington?
Well, originally, I came from New Orleans.
New Orleans, that's right.
Remember, of course, you had me under hypnosis so many times, you probably know more about me than I do.
New Orleans, that's the place that rings a bell, right?
Right.
Okay, now tell me a little bit about this play.
Well, I grew up in Washington, D.C., in the northeast section, around a playground, a giant playground. And this this series is about this community center in northeast Washington. And it's run by a guy by the name of Nick Cyznyk, spelled S-Z-Y-S-Z-N-Y-K, just like it sounds. And he was in the Marines for 27 years, and he just got out. And this is his first civilian job, and he has to run this community center with a bunch of wise kids who don't want a supervisor. and we take off from there.
Who's Sisnick?
Sisnick is played by Ned Beatty.
No, I don't know him.
Ned, did you see Network, Larry?
Yes.
Why, he was in Network. He got an Academy Award nomination for Network.
What was his part in Network?
Well, he was the one who had that great speech about money in the conference room to Peter Finch.
Oh, aha!
That's Ned Beatty.
Oh, that was great, right?
He was also in Deliverance, but I wouldn't want to tell you what happened to him in Deliverance.
Oh, he was the... He was that
guy.
He was that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, now, see, it's funny I didn't make that connection.
Neither did Ned.
But anyway, the culprit got the bow and arrow.
Yes.
And, oh, isn't that funny?
And we have a great cast, I think. We have Olivia Cole, who was in Roots. She plays his boss. And we have Leonard Barr, who is Dean Martin's uncle, believe it or not. He's 71 years old. And he has a real nice part in Sisnick, and we have a bunch of kids. And just a real good cast to pull off these stories.
And may I tell you this one story, then I want to find out more about Sisnick.
Okay.
But I was just thinking about creative writing. I went to Emerson College here, took the broadcasting course, and there was Dave Rodman, who's over at Channel 7, and a fellow named John Martino. And we were in this creative script writing course.
Right.
I'll never forget this, and I want to ask you some questions about this. And we had to write a 30-minute radio show. This goes back some time ago. There was no television at that time, just radio.
Right.
So we were over at Dave Rodman's house, and we decided to write a whodunit. And as we went along, Dave was leading this whole, all the thoughts, you know. And then Johnny would mention something, I'd mention something, and then Dave Rodman would eventually say, yeah, that's beautiful. It fits right in, yeah. And then at the end, of course, we wanted the twist ending.
Right.
And we were all thrashing around, a good twist ending. And Johnny mentioned a few and I didn't. Finally, Dave says, you know, I think, how about this, fellas? Let's try this on for size. That's Hollywood talk. And he said, this is it. And I said, great. I said, what an ending. And Johnny said the same thing, great. We wrote the thing up and it timed out to 29 minutes and 30 seconds, just the way he wanted it. And we presented it. We were so proud. And we felt that we really had participated in writing this 30-minute radio script. We presented it. And the teacher said, hey, this is really great. This is really great. All the things that they taught us in creative script writing. Now, there was a fellow in the class. And isn't it funny? Now, this goes back a long time, Ron.
Yeah.
A kid who never opened his mouth in the back. He was a fat kid with glasses. His name was Trask. I didn't forget his first name. Trask. And he never said anything the whole time we were in the class, except this time, the teacher said, are there any comments on this? And I was waiting, everyone say, yeah, hey, that was really great. Oh, what a... And this guy, Trask, stands up and he says, you know, I think this whole thing sounded familiar. He says, I think I heard that on a radio show about 8 or 10 months ago. So it's a funny thing. No one else had heard it. It was a small class. So John and I looked at Dave, you know.
There's always one in every crowd, you know.
That's right. This guy never opened his mouth until that time. Son of a gun. So when we left,
That's good.
Johnny and I cornered Dave, and we said, hey, Dave, you got to tell us the truth. And we got an A on it, you know.
That's the way it is out here, too. You come up with an idea, you stand up in front of a bunch of guys, I've got a great idea, I've got an idea. Now, here's how it goes. He walks in here and he does that, and someone says, no, they did that on Sanford and Son last week.
But anyways, the story
you come up with seems like someone else has already done it.
But the story was, Dave finally confessed. He said he heard it. It was a radio show. He and Trask were the only ones that heard it. I wonder what Trask is now.
Oh, anyway, he's out reading a meter somewhere.
Now, how about this Mulligan? What's his background, Jim Mulligan?
Jim and I grew up together in Washington, and then he went into some sort of business, but in the late 60s, he came out here and got a job as a writer on the original Laugh-In. And he wrote the pilot of Laugh-In and then stayed with Laugh-In for 5 years and then went on to do other variety shows. And this is Jim's first situation comedy also. So he stepped out of variety and I stepped out of radio and we both combined forces to go into situation comedy.
And what I want to do, Ron, I've got a couple of spots here, then I want to come back and I want to ask you, how you write this? I mean, where you sit to write this and how you actually write a radio script, okay?
Okay.
We'll be right back.
This would be television with the pictures and everything.
That's radio with pictures, right?
That's right.
We'll be right back with Ron Landry.
Priced at $24.95, is only $13.97 this week at Mass Hardware Home Centers, 170 High Street, Waltham, Route 2A, Acton.
Mass Hardware, 170 High Street, Waltham, Route 2A, Acton. Mass Hardware. Mass Hardware Home Centers. Where you get the best for less.
And now back to California, the land of sunshine, the land that's sinking into the ocean.
Dave Maynard on that?
What's that?
Was that Dave Maynard on that spot?
Yes.
Boy, I haven't heard Dave in years. He's great.
Listen, you want to hear something before I forget? We had a softball game with the Dedham Police Department, and it was a 13-13 tie, and they had to turn the lights out. But Dick Pace knew I was going to call you tonight, and Dick Pace said, be sure to say hi to Ron Landry, give him his best. I said, I shall.
Oh, yeah, Dick's a wonderful guy. I've known Dick for a long, long time now.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said, be sure.
He's for the bar, isn't he?
Yes, that's right, yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Listen to this. You don't know Muck Meyer, Ken Meyer, my producer. He's been with me for six and a half years, that's when you've been gone for seven.
Yeah.
But when he went to Graham Junior College.
The guy who was following me into the building as I was walking out, I remember him.
That's he, right.
Yeah.
But anyways, the school is now defunct. The school is, he just told me while the commercial was playing that one of his assignments when he was at Graham Junior College was to, well, I'll let him tell you himself. Muck's in the newsroom right now. Snap on that microphone, Muck.
Good morning, all.
Oh, that's right. Ron, this is, his real name is Ken Meyer, but when they brought him in 6 years ago, they said, this is your producer. I said, what's his name? He says, Ken Meyer. And the name Muck popped right in my mind. I said, no, not Ken. It's Muck and Meyer. Muck Meyer.
Ken Meyer.
This is Ron Landry Muck. And when he was there, he was a kid. He had a very sheltered life in Rochester. And he's here, and he's changed a little bit. He uses a little profanity. He never did when he first came here. Now, see, sometimes it's not filthy, but a little on the dirty side. But,
a little shady.
Yes. Okay. Anyways, Ron Landry was on.
A little shady.
And Muck had to do a critique on Ron Landry's show. That was your assignment. And now let's take it from there, Muck.
That's right. We had an assignment. We had to critique all the Boston radio stations in the area and write a paper on each on an hour of each radio station, how their shows were presented. And I picked your show.
This is your life.
This was either the early part of 1969. I remember it, and I taped it, and I sat
my
back.
My peak year, yeah. I was wonderful that year, as I remember.
As a matter of fact, I think I wrote that in the paper. I hope so, anyway. But I got an A on the paper. But that was one of our assignments, and when anyone here has ever talked about Ron Landry, I've always remembered that I had to critique an hour of your programming.
Now, what I'd like to say...
The paper?
Pardon?
He got an A.
On the paper?
Yes, I did.
Well, I'm proud to have added to your education, Muck.
I'm proud, too.
I'd like to get the story behind the story, Muck. He has an excellent memory for a kid from Rochester. Now, what can you remember about this critique 7 years ago or thereabouts? Not 8 years ago.
I wish you hadn't have asked me that.
Oh, every time...
It was a controversial paper. That's what it was.
Every time I count on his memory, it fails him. I think I'll flagellate. You forgot everything, right, Mark?
All I remember was we had to critique the announcer's presentation, how the commercials were integrated into the program, with the records, and things like that. Just take the whole hour and analyze the whole thing, and that's all I can remember. I mean, That was nine years
what
ago.
What about all these clever inserts
back in
that
the
he
Stone
had?
Age.
All these sound effects, these clever inserts, Mark. Do you remember those? The various voices that he used to use.
I heard one.
He heard one.
Well, see, I listened to Jerry Williams from 10 to midnight, I must admit, but...
He wasn't on at that time. He was on in the afternoon.
No, Jerry was... That's why I say most of the time I listened to Jerry. I never listened to BZ much during the day. I used to listen to Jerry and you.
Right.
But the one that I did hear was once when he had Mary Rice imitate Johnny Most's wife on the air. And I heard that, and I
had to listen that day.
I heard that, and I loved it. I thought that was funny.
Is Johnny still kicking around WBZ?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. John, will you tell John I said hello? Yeah.
Well, I'm going to sign off.
Well, okay, Mark,
hey,
that was great.
Good to talk to you.
Same here. So long, fans.
Hey,
if there's a chance... If there's a chance for this kid, I think that he'd like to move on to television, and we'd like to get rid of him here, so... remember
he
his name is...
to me, Larry.
What's that?
Anybody who can critique a program remembered after 8 years, and remember Johnny Most's wife routine He's got to have something on a ball.
He's got something on a ball. It's a little grease. Well, now, once again, back to your program, Sisnik.
That's right.
Sisnik. The first show will be August 1st, Monday night at 8:30.
Yeah, it's a week from Monday.
A week? By Jove, that's right. It's almost August.
Yeah.
A week Monday. And what's CBS here?
I don't know. Is that...
5-7.
Seven.
Channel 7. I'll have to watch that. Now, how do you... This fellow Mulligan and you, where do you write this? I mean, physically, where do you write it, and how do you write it? And how long does it take you to write? Was it a half-hour show?
Yeah, a half-hour show.
How long does it take to write it?
A half-hour show, like in about, 10 days, I'd say. It takes you a day or two to come up with a story, but the way it started out, we actually wrote the presentation for this on Jim's boat. Jim has a boat at Marina Del Rey, and neither one of us had an office, so he said, look, I've got this boat. Why don't we meet out there? We met out there, and we wrote the presentation out there. A presentation is a little different than a script. It's a sales tool to go to the network and say, here's an idea for a series, here are the characters, here is the location, this is what's going to happen, and here are a few ideas of stories that could come out of this. And then once they bought that, then we got an office in town in Hollywood, and we just go in every day and pitch stories back and forth. You and I were talking, and
yeah,
let's do a story about a runaway, or let's do a story about... Well, I'll tell you some of the stories that we actually wrote for Sisnik. The first one is like a territorial dispute. It's Sisnik's first job at the community center, and he runs across the guys who hang out there. And they're not too happy with a new supervisor, especially one who was a Marine for 27 years, because he looks like he might be a little strict. And that's how that story goes. The second story is about one of the kids who's 17 years old, and we find out in the middle of the story that he can't read. And he's been through high school, he's been through all his life, and he never learned to read. What he learned to do was he learned to fake to read. And that's a very serious problem in our country today, the educational system being what it is, with so many kids and the standards of education not being equal. Many, many children can get out of high school without being able to read anything more than their name.
I know. I heard that recently. I was really surprised at that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story, and also a lot of humor can come out of that. So Jim and I started talking about that one day. We read an article in the paper or something. We talked about it, and then we devised the story. Now, the first thing that we would do would be write about a 10-page outline of what we're going to do, scene by scene, create each scene. And then once we have that as a map, as a guideline, then we sit down and actually write it page by page.
Ron, I have a couple of more messages, but when I come back, I'd like to ask you questions about, do they tell you we want to have black and white, Hispanic, we want to have boys and girls, Catholics, Protestants, Jews, do you mix all that stuff in? Will you tell us about that after
Sure.
we come back?
5:30, NASA Charge and Bank America at Welcome at Name Dropper.
Okay, back to Ron Landry, who is...
you've got some nice jingles.
Listen, I mean, if you're going to
hit me with another jingle, would you, Larry? Just a good WBZ jingle. I haven't heard one in 7 years.
How was that one? How was that?
That sounded great.
I think I'll give you one more. What the heck?
Yeah, hit me with another one.
How's that, huh?
Yeah, real good.
Yeah. Listen, here's what I want to do. I want you to tell us a little bit for a short time, then I've got to get two more. It's commercial, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not apologizing. I'm happy, you know.
Oh, sure.
I'm happy.
Run them.
Huh?
Run them.
You mean it?
Sure.
Okay, because I want to get these in, and I want to talk to you some more. I want to talk to you about... can you have time after the news, too?
Oh, sure.
I want to ask you about... You know, when you write it, as I asked you before about the blacks and the whites and the Christians and the Muslims and the Jews,
right.
And about sex, and then I want to ask you about violence on TV and all of these things. What's happening? You put any violence in? You'll answer all. Why don't you take notes on some of these things? I want to ask you if you know Milt Josephsburg. Did you ever hear of him?
Oh, I work with Milk Jugs.
Oh, son, we had him on here. You know, he's written a book about, you know, Jack Benny.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I can tell you kind of a funny story about Milk.
Hey, why don't we hold on? Why don't we hold on? Because I want to hear that in its entirety, okay? I'm going to do a small commercial, Ron.
I want to hear it.
All right.
Once again, back to the Larry Glick Show. We're talking to an old friend, Ron Landry, who worked here at WBZ, I thought, 3 or 4 years ago. It's been 7 years ago.
Went out to Los Angeles, became a huge success, radio shows, and now he deserted radio, and he's writing TV programs, TV scripts, and he's written one. His first one will be on next...
my dog is reading Playboy magazine. I didn't know my dog could read. He's not reading, he's just looking at the pictures. That's what I do. It's good to hear Ace Glick again. Ace is still on your payroll.
Yeah, right.
I thought you were going to can him years ago.
No, we got rid of Streeter Glick. I used to do the news, and I kept saying each week, I said, I said at front office, I said, please, it would be great to get someone to do the news, or get a professional to do the news. And then after about 5 years, they did, and that was really great. So Streeter Glick left the scene.
But Ace is still there wearing the sports hat.
I still have my little baseball cap on, yes. Ace Glick does the reporting. Now, once again, we were talking, this is Ron Landry, and in case you've just tuned in, maybe people have just turned TV off. Sometimes they do that at 1 o'clock in the morning. I hate to say that to you, Ron, now that you've deserted radio, you're in with a new medium. Ron's new show will be on CBS starting August 1st, Monday night at 8:30. It's called Sisnik. And this is an area.
Yes, you see, his father was from Iceland, and his mother was Cuban. That makes him an ice cube. Actually, it's a Polish name. Polish-Ukrainian.
Polish-Ukrainian.
Yeah. I was looking for something that was startling, something without any vowels. And I think when you see it, I think I hit it.
Sisnik.
When you look at it, it looks like a typo.
Yeah, when I looked at it, I'm glad you wrote in the back and you pronounced it Sisnik.
Yeah.
Because if I were to see that, you know, they're all consonants, you know, I'd say, how do you... That's a good name, a Sisnik. Well, anyways, let's talk more about writing, about some of these people. We had Milt Josephsberg, he came in and he did a show here, and he wrote the book on Jack Benny. And I want to know, in order to have a successful show, a successful television show, how much sex and violence and racial stuff do you have to put in?
Well...
Now, this is the honest program. Now, you've got to tell the truth, Ron.
I'm going to tell the truth.
All right.
I wouldn't lie to you at all. I think, it's my opinion that a hit show really depends on the characters and the stories. And that's a very broad, general kind of statement. But out here, too many people write and create very shallow characters and don't bother that much with the stories. Now, I'm in situation comedy, and we don't deal very much in violence, so I don't know very much about violence. And we haven't gotten too sexy because we're on at that family hour, 8:30, and it's a family kind of show because we have young kids, and we have a senior citizens lounge in this community center, and we have a daycare center, so it's that ambiance right there. As far as the network telling you what to do, they do very little of that. I mean, it's been my experience that the network has been quite helpful in creating a product that the network could live with. In other words, you're playing in their ball game, and they just, what they need is product. And if you bring the right product along, they'll buy it. And if you don't, they won't. And it's as simple as that.
Now, this fellow's a Polish...
an example of censorship. We were doing a show, and we had a line in one of our scripts. Both of these lines are easily acceptable, but not for CBS. We had a line where Sisnik said, well, where's Arch, the other player? And one of the kids said, he couldn't make it because of the moon. And Sisnik said, what is he, some sort of astrology freak? And he said, no, he mooned the Monsignor. Well, the censor, the lady from the censors from CBS said, you can't say that. You can't say moon the Monsignor. So he said, okay, fine. And we went upstairs and we changed it around and it came out like this on the tape. Sisnik said, well, where's Arch, the other guy? And one of the guys said, he can't be here because of his clothes. And Sisnik says, I don't care how you dress around here. And the guy says, yeah, but the Monsignor does. He dropped his pants at assembly. Now, they let that go by, but they wouldn't let the moon go by.
Huh.
And that's that's where I'm at right here with situation comedy. They just seem to pick on certain things, and they just won't allow them. And so it's up to the writer to go back upstairs and change it into something that he will allow.
Well, tell us more about what else. What do you try? I understand this the type of character this Sisnik is supposed to perform. Is the show just entertainment? Or is there a message?
Well, no, we're trying. No, you see, I think the key behind these situation comedies is to have really good stories that would be entertaining even if they weren't funny. Now, I told you about the one that we did about one of the kids couldn't read. Now, we had another story where one of the kid's brothers shows up at the community center, and we find out at a certain point that he was also in the Marines, just like Sisnik, and he was in Vietnam, just like Sisnik, only he was a deserter, and he's been living in Canada. Now, that's a very, very heavy subject to touch on, especially comedically. But I think that it's something that, we should deal with. It's something that we should really look at, because there are a lot of young men who went that direction, and they have something to say.
How do you get
also, Sisnik, who spent 27 years in the Corps, with his life on the line all the way, had something to say also. So it was an opportunity to give both sides a chance to say something and do it the funny way.
I was just going to say, how can you get anything funny out of speaking to a deserter?
Wait and see.
Hey, you son of a guy.
About our third show, I think. There was a lot of funny things in the show. There's comedy in everything. The idea is to come up with a strong enough story so that it's entertaining even without being funny. And then when you've got that, then the job is to make it funny.
Now, this fellow Josephsberg, what's your opinion of him as a writer?
Oh, he's marvelous. He's like one of the deans of the comedy writers in Hollywood. As you know, since you had him on his show, he wrote for Benny and Hope and near about everybody, and he's producing All in the Family now. And about 3 years ago, I spent a month with Milt when he was creating a half-hour situation comedy for Hudson and Landry, a show entitled You Better Believe It, which was a great show, and I loved it, and Bob loved it, and Bill loved it, but unfortunately there was an agent in the middle of all of this who made the project so unbelievably unlikable that all of us decided just to drop it. And when that agent did not get that commission, he ate his heart out. And when he ate his heart out, he broke a tooth. That's the kind of guy he was. That was my experience with Milt Josephsberg. He's a fine, fine writer.
Now, what happened with Hudson, your comedy team?
Well, Bob and I decided when I came up with the Sisnik idea to go separate ways, because Bob had things that he wanted to do. Bob is a very fine horseman. He's been following horses now for like 25 years. And he really knows bloodlines, and he knows thoroughbred racing, and he wanted to raise horses, and that's what he's doing.
He's on radio, too.
Yeah, but he's doing commercials and other, little things, little addendums to the income. But basically, that's what he's into, and that's what he wanted to do all his life, and now he's got a chance to do it.
We have a couple of more messages. I want to be back and ask you more about the actual program. When you write it, are you there when the actors do it? And what?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'll tell you all about that after this commercial. Yes, well, now, where were we?
We were talking about writing it and then seeing the players and being there and saying, no, that's not the message. That's not the way I wanted you to say it. Do you do that?
Oh, sure, because, you see, the ideal way to do this, and we had an opportunity to have the ideal way this time around anyway. They ordered six shows, so we wrote the six scripts before we started taping, so that on Monday morning, the cast was assembled, and they were given a script, and they would just read the script around a table. And then our director, Peter Bonners, who is on the Bob Newhart show, he plays the dentist on the Bob Newhart show, he directed all six of our episodes. Then he would take the cast, and they would rehearse all day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then on Wednesday at 5 o'clock, they would give the writers a run-through, and we would watch the whole thing. Then after that was over, we would have a meeting, and we'd make suggestions and changes and whatever. And then on Thursday, we would do it on camera once, and we would get a chance to see that again, make changes. And then on Friday, At 5 o'clock, we do one show in front of an audience, and then at 8 o'clock, do another show in front of an audience.
Oh, they're all done in front of live audiences.
Oh, yes.
Good.
So every Friday night was like opening night, see? So it becomes a very exciting kind of project.
I guess, did you ever bump into my niece, it's my late brother's daughter, Phyllis Glick. She's done some stuff out there. Phyllis Glick.
There's a very great disc jockey out here by the name of Patty Glick.
Patty Glick?
Yeah, Patty Glick works at KLOS in Los Angeles, and Patty used to produce the Hudson and Landry show.
Oh, KLOS?
Yeah.
Patty Glick.
She must be a relative.
I don't know of anyone out there with that name. By Jove, what station KLOS?
I always call her a Glicknick, and she always smiles, so I figure she knows.
KLOS?
Yeah.
At what time is she on? What kind of a show does she do?
She plays records, and she's on from 10 until 2. 10 at night until 2 in the morning.
Your time, 10 till 2.
Yeah, right.
I'll have Mutt give her a buzz.
You really should talk to Patty Glick. Larry Glick talking to Patty Glick.
I never heard of Patty Glick. I wonder if she's ever heard of Larry Glick.
You two ought to get together. I think maybe I've started something.
Uh-huh.
The whole world, all of radio should be full of Glicks.
Hey, Ron.
Only Glicks.
You should have said that, but it's great. I'd like to hear that.
What a great idea. Glick Radio.
Oh, hey, one more thing about Glicks.
Yeah?
I was out to Las Vegas a few weeks ago.
Oh.
And I didn't do too well financially, but wasn't bad, because I'm not that much of a gambler, but I was at this hotel, and when I registered, they said, I put down Larry Glick, and they said, are you related to Mr. Alan Glick? I said, no. I said, you mean... From Los Angeles? They said, no, here. I said, no, I have a nephew that lives in Los Angeles named Alan Glick. He's a stockbroker. No.
Right.
I went to another place, a restaurant, signed the tab, and they said, are you related to Mr. Alan Glick? And after three inquiries, I said, who is this guy? Well, it turns out that he owns the Stardust Motel, the hotel, and the Flamingo, and a few other the big hotels. I said, holy mackerel, Alan Glick. There aren't that many Glicks around. I think I'll call him and try to get him for an interview in the show.
Absolutely. I mean, he could be a long-lost uncle. And the next time you go to Vegas, watch your luck change.
So that's what I was thinking. So I called, and I got one secretary, and then I got another one, and this one said, who's calling? And I said, Larry Glick. And then I got a third secretary. You know, it's not easy to get to him. And this third secretary had a little bit of an English accent, and she sounded so polite and so friendly. And she said to me, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Glick. She said, but Mr. Glick just doesn't give interviews to anyone. So I said, well, not really an interview. I said, I do a talk show in Boston, a fun-type talk show. And I thought it would be interesting to, you know, local boy makes good, you know, owns all these hotels, millions of dollars and so forth. You know. She said, well, I'll tell him that you called, but I'm not sure that you'll get the interview. So I said, well, just tell him. Well, anyways, I'd never heard from him. And I came back to Boston, and the next week I opened up Time Magazine, and there's a picture of the Stardust Hotel, and it says, Alan Glick, Stardust, who's skimming from the slot machines, being investigated by the state of Nevada, the United States Internal Revenue, and all this stuff. And that was embarrassing. I said, I never realized. And then I think it said in the article, I just skimmed through it, it said that he had borrowed something like $160 million from the Teamsters Union.
You know, that's why he's not giving interviews.
That's right. That's, yeah. But I think it said that he owes him only $90 million now.
Oh, yeah. Well, he'll pay that off.
Right.
A month at a time, it dwindles away.
Oh, that was really good. So I felt a little better, and I know I didn't get the interview. Well, anyway, you know...
You've got to promise me to call Patty Glick.
As a matter of fact, we will, because we're going to wind this up and give you another plug. I've got some more things I have to do, and
okay,
we're going to call her now.
I want to say hello to Dick Pace and Pat Randall and Dave Maynard and Carl D'Souza and everybody at BZ. It's great to be on the Spirit of New England once again. It's Sisnik, a week from Monday on CBS at 8:30. Larry, you're wonderful. Thank you very much for your time and your program.
Listen, I appreciate you being on with us, and I want to wish you all kinds of success, really. And you'll have it, too, because I've got faith in you, Ron Landry.
All right, thank you, Larry. Listen, you've got my home number anytime.
Thank you, Ron.
Okay.
And good luck with this.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye, Ron.
Good night.
We'll be right back after these messages.
You've been listening to Steve Cishan.
Memories from staffannouncer.com.
This has been your announcer, Ed Little.
MassHardware.com and Steve Cishon.